saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. This podcast is brought to you by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Oh, hey, didn't see you there. Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan.
I'm Tyler.
And this week, we're talking about Modern Horizons 3, long awaited. We've seen these cards in little bits for many weeks now. The set is finally coming. There's so many cards we're going to talk about. In fact, that we're probably going to make this a two-parter podcast. I'm really excited.
So am I. We have seen and even talked about some of these cards on the channel already, but this time we're going to do a deep dive into every single thing Modern Horizons, including the commander sets that will be coming out too. So we have Tyler here as well. I don't know. I thought we should just address you too. So
should we start with the white colors? Start at the colors?
Yeah, we're going to go color order and then go alphabetical. So let's start with Charitable Levy.
Wait, but Wooburg isn't alphabetical.
That's true. Should we alphabetize Wooburg first?
Alphabetize the colors.
Alphabetize the colors.
I'm already confused and disoriented, so let's go back to
how we normally do
it. Yeah. Charitable Levy is one and a white for an enchantment that says non-creature spells cost one more to cast, and whenever a player casts a non-creature spell, put a collection counter on Charitable Levy. Then, if there are three or more collection counters on it, sack it, and if you do, you draw a card, and then search your library for a planes card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, and then shuffle.
I like this card. I think this card does something interesting that we don't see a ton, which is something that we're seeing a little bit more recently in stacked pieces that can remove themselves when they need to, right?
Yeah, sort of. I think you don't get the option of whether to sack it or not, though, which is a little frustrating. So, it essentially, obviously, is like Thalia. It probably sticks around for a long time. But when you convert this into a planes and a card, if you still want the stacks piece down, that probably feels bad a lot of the time. Replacing itself is good, but I don't know.
I think of it more of like a tempo card than an actual stacks card, in that it hopefully will slow your opponents down just in the beginning stages of the game, but then it won't shut your other opponents off from interacting with a win condition. If someone's going for a win, normally more than three spells have been cast. So by the time it's time for your opponents to help you interact, that thing is off. You've drawn an extra card and found a land. I don't know. We haven't really seen something that's exactly like this, but I kind of like it for the tempo player.
I think it's interesting because it might make your opponents not cast non-creature spells because they want this effect to be up for someone else's turn.
That's true.
Right? Like,
that's not going to happen.
I don't know. Like maybe it
People
could.
Don't
like,
even
like,
pay for Rhystic Study. You think they're going to just be like, well, I don't want him to get the land.
I pay for Rhystic Study all the time.
I don't
Bites
know.
Me in the ass every single time.
Everyone who I've seen recently not pay for Rhystic Study has lost games. So even though they're not doing it, that doesn't mean that they're playing correctly. So I think there are going to be situations where, like, that could be curiously something that comes up where, like, I'm incentivized to make sure that someone else isn't going to go off on their turn. The only problem right now is that the meta hasn't really liked this kind of effect recently, so I don't think it's going to see any impact initially here. I think down the line it could, if getting a planes card being the payoff is good enough.
Yeah, you also draw a card, right?
I guess that's true.
So it's kind of like
it
you
does
draw
replace
two.
Itself,
in a
too.
Weird way, it's a two mana draw two, which is like always almost playable.
A delayed draw.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's close. Not every deck is going to pick it up, but I do think some slower mid-range decks are going to be interested.
Planes card is nice because you can get scrub land and you can get, I don't know, anything else that's relevant. That's a planes too.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you can get a surveil land with this, and then this card finds you a time walk.
There you go.
Ooh. Wow. Okay.
This card's
two
a time
mana,
walk.
Time walk tutor.
Thalia and a time walk.
Wow. What do we? This card's a five all
five
of a sudden.
Five.
Five out of five.
No, it's hard to rate this one because we haven't seen enough like this. I still probably rate it like a 2.5 just because I'm not sure, and it doesn't go in every deck for sure. But I think it's playable.
Yeah, I think you're dead on.
I'm gonna say it's just a two.
Just a two.
Just a two. Because again, this effect right now in the format isn't good, and if we ever get back to something else, maybe this one will be, but let's move on. Flare of Fortitude is our next card. This is two and two white for an instant that says you may sacrifice a non-token white creature rather than pay the spell's mana cost. Until end of turn, your life total can't change and permanents you control gain hexproof and indestructible. This is kind of like a free version of Teferi's Protection almost.
Almost.
I mean, it's a lot more like heroic intervention, right?
I think of it kind of like an Angel's Grace, where like you don't lose the game from losing the life, right? Like you can, with Ad Nauseam, you can go through your whole deck after casting this. I think that part's nice.
Yeah. I think this is gonna see no play.
Yeah, we did just now name three cards that it's like, and all of those cards don't see any play, right? The Heroic Intervention, the card that you named, and the Angel's Grace. None of those cards really see much play.
They're all big casual cards.
Besides very specific.
You saw CDH All-Star, Platinum Empyrean.
But there is a world, if you're playing Timna Ad Nauseam, Sacrifice, it's probably not good enough, but it's a free spell, so I always want to look at these cards a little bit extra, because what it does isn't always as important as like the fact that it's just free, although you do have to invest the mana in the creature that you're sacrificing, so...
And it has to be a non-token creature,
yeah.
Too.
This one's probably, in my opinion so far, like the fourth out of the fifth in power level. I still think like the green one is a little bit worse, but I don't think it's as strong as some of the other ones.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I don't know where I'm playing this, probably in mono white decks is all. Otherwise, I'm just going to leave it alone.
It gives indestructible, right?
It can give hexproof and indestructible to all of your permanents.
The hexproof is nice. The indestructible, I feel like, doesn't do enough because there's too many Swords to Plowshares and Cyclonic Rift and Toxic Deluge. Those are like our main removal, so that doesn't do enough. But the hexproof is helpful there.
The hexproof is only interesting because you're still 2-for-1-ing yourself to keep your other thing. So the thing that you want to give hexproof to better be like really fucking worth it. And you better have like other stuff that isn't going to affect the game that you have to sacrifice to. Like, I think that's still something that's very hard to do.
Yeah, that's true. I think a mono white deck would be interested in playing something like this. Heliod, I don't think that's out of the question for Heliod to play this.
Yeah, if you are trying to protect your combo, like at instant speed, this card's still really good too. But yeah, let's move on. Oh, what should we rate it?
Better than the last card we talked about, but not by much. So, maybe not better than the last card we talked about.
Yeah, I would say this is 2.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, actually. I like the other effect more. It's more interesting. I think it actually will see a little bit of play. Oh, yeah, 2.
It's a 2. Great. Razorgrass Ambush is 1 and a white for an instant that deals 3 damage to an attacking or blocking creature, but it's also a land that taps for white mana and can enter the battlefield untapped if you pay 3 life.
This is great. This is one of the good ones.
Yeah, the untapped land. Normally, this is like a draft playable card. I think these cards are playable in draft. The 3 damage to an attacking or blocking creature, those are normally fine, right, in white decks. You would know better than I do, but I normally take those.
They're okay. They're okay. Getting outclassed now.
Yeah, which is kind of funny. We're talking about that card for CDH, but if it's on the back of an untapped land, that's like way better.
That's really what makes it good. So each color got 2 of these lands that are also spells on the other side of them. And much like the scenarios where we see that we want to play like Shatterskull Smashing or Agadeem's Awakening or, you know, any of the other previous ones that we got from our recent visit to Zendikar, those same scenarios, we're going to want to see this. But I think a lot of the time, these from Modern Horizons are actually going to be better because they don't cost a bajillion mana on the other side. And you might actually be able to use these as utility significantly more often than you ever could with those rares from that last set.
Yeah, just with the aggressively costed spell sides on them, they feel a lot more relevant in the early game, or at least at multiple points in the game, I think, than the big spells from the set you were talking about.
How do you compare this to Ijongo, the channel white land that deals, I think, 4 damage to an attacking or blocking creature?
Easy. And it's on that
channel.
Channel
is so much better.
That one's so much better. And that one doesn't see much play at all, unfortunately, right?
We're still probably talking about low-color white decks.
Yeah.
Just, this is a very good cycle of lands, and this is one of the better of the cycle of lands, I think.
Definitely. I think so. Do low-color white decks, are they going to play both of this effect, like damage to an attacking or blocking creature with the land as the other part? Would you want 2 of that?
In mono white, you probably want it, but the second you add a second color, I probably want to shave at least 1 of them.
I agree. If you're in mono white, I think without question you play this card just because it's a land, and it doesn't matter if it pings you 3 life because that's just rarely going to come up and be relevant, but the other side might.
This card's a 3 to go along with the 3 damage that it deals because it's going to see a very medium amount of play in just these, again, mono white decks, but it's still going to be very impactful and helpful for them.
Yeah, I like that out of 3.
Yeah, definitely. Once you get into 2 color, though, it becomes hard because then you start jeopardizing, like, you can't cast your counter spells now if you're in blue white, or you can't cast other stuff because it only taps for white. So it can bite you in the ass, but overall it's going to be a happy treat for monocolor decks to have.
Static Prison is 1 white for an enchantment that enters the battlefield and exiles target non-land permanent an opponent controls until it leaves the battlefield, and you get 2 energy. At the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, you sacrifice Static Prison unless you pay an energy.
Yeah, I think this card is like surprisingly good. It's kind of like Delay in that it doesn't get rid of the thing forever. It just gets rid of it for a couple turns. But for one mana, you're getting rid of basically anything.
That's interesting. It's kind of like the, yeah, the inverse of Delay that way.
It's for three turns. I think the best use case here is probably hitting like Rhystic Studies and like the card draw engine is probably what this is mostly going to do. That's one where, you know, it being temporary is not a big deal. Like just three turns without those effects is really powerful. The fact that it can hit anything is great. And you know, it's essentially going to feel like three turn cycles because you cast it in your main phase and then you have two upkeeps that it'll stick around and then on the third one it'll die. So that's a pretty long time. I mean, you know, when we talk about other cards like Delay, as you said, that three turns feels like an eternity.
I feel like I used to see Glass Casket in some decks. And like, again, I know we're talking a lot about mono white right now, but I feel like there's a lot of other like more expensive enchantments that do something like this. And this, after we've started talking about it a little bit, I think it's better than I thought it was when I first read it, because if we are thinking about like three turns, like the things that you delay are never coming back from exile,
and
there.
By the time they do, the game is so different that that thing often just doesn't matter nearly as much as it did back
exactly then. Yeah, the only thing that I think might hold this card back is sorcery speed only. Like it not having flash I think definitely is a drawback. Delay is also really good because it can stop like instants and sorceries as well. So there are going to be some card types that this isn't going to hit like that technically. But otherwise, like this being a overall removal spell that can hit anything in play, like I think that is spectacular.
I'm pretty
least.
Sure this is the best we've had, the best rate that we've had this effect. Exiling a non-land for one mana, I don't think we've ever had it that easy before.
No, we binding. Still get Oblivion Rings at three mana very consistently.
People were talking about the Sunburst one from, was that from MH2? As though that was
the
gonna,
Converge one?
Is it Converge? Did I say what?
You
I
said
say?
Sunburst?
They're the same.
What
mechanic,
card are you talking
though?
About?
It's like the number of colors that you spent to cast the spell, and it exiles a permanent with CMC that or less.
Yeah, we were just talking about this card
we
the other day.
We were just talking about this at Modern the other night. I hate this card. It's so
for
bad.
Prismatic ending? Prismatic ending.
Is it prismatic ending?
Prismatic ending, I think. Yeah. That card is fine in other formats. It's not good in our format. It ends up being too expensive too quickly.
Yeah, but people were talking about that as though it might see play in our format. And
oh,
this
yeah.
is just like
way better.
Way better.
Way better. Way better for us. Because you don't care about, like we said, if it comes back, who cares?
Prismatic Ending is a sorcery, right?
Prismatic Ending is a sorcery, right? I'd almost rather play this in Modern over Prismatic Ending, but I'm a lunatic, so don't listen to me on that
I
part.
Do think there's probably going to be energy decks in Modern, to be honest. I don't know if they'll have white or not. I'm not sure, but I do think that this card probably could see play. I don't see why not.
Also, interesting note that this is a case where we're removing energy on our pre-combat main phase as opposed to our upkeep.
I don't know why this is so frustrating to me, because we have a phase that's just for this kind
literally,
of thing.
Literally, yeah. This is why the upkeep is existing.
I just don't understand why not do it at the upkeep.
I don't either.
Why would you do it at the pre-combat main phase?
I hate that decision.
Pre-combat main phase is so many syllables and words. Upkeep, beautiful. That's where it goes.
All right, let's put us in a better mood. Yeah. Let's talk about Witch Enchanter. This is 3 and a white for a 2/2 human warlock that enters the battlefield and destroys an artifact and enchantment and opponent controls, but it's also a planes on the back that is untapped if you pay 3 life.
Not a planes,
but it's a white mana land.
Taps for white.
That was my shortcutted way to say that. You can't fetch for it.
This one's great. I like this one a lot.
This one is definitely better than the ambush, I think, and I think this one is going to see play in like the 2-color white decks more often.
I don't know that I think it's strictly better than that one. It really depends on how many answers you already have in your decks to artifacts and enchantments. And it is destroy, not exile, so like it doesn't hit one ring, that kind of thing. I do think it's still strong. Again, it just depends on how many colors your deck is running. We didn't really say this when we talked about the first one, but for all of these double-faced lands, all of them benefit decks that are already running 1 or 2 colors, and maybe sometimes 3, a lot more than decks running more colors, because the mana base is already doing too much work in like 4-color, 5-color decks, and usually in 3-color decks too. It cannot be stretched to include all these that will only tap for 1 color, whereas, you know, decks with just 2 colors or monocolor decks are going to have the room usually to put in a couple more utility lands that can do more than one thing.
I agree. I think in monocolor decks, these lands that we talked about and all the lands that we talk about are almost staples. They're just such an easy include, because there's no losing factor. You don't lose anything the fact that you could be color screwed. The more colors you add, the worse and worse these effect gets. I know this one I like the most. Also, we haven't really mentioned this yet, but like for like things like Bolas' Citadel, where like you don't want to hit 2 lands in a row, normally this would have been a land, but now it's a non-land that even though you're casting it for 4 life, like you're still getting through it. I think there's going to be a lot of small situations like that that come up with these cards. cards that really just benefit you a lot for playing a low land count.
Yeah, like it's really going to depend on your strategy. Like if you are in a Shorokai polymorph deck, all of a sudden you don't want something like this. Yeah. But like this is a reason to stay off of the polymorph plan and actually play the good cards that you're missing out on instead, right? Now you get to play Witch Enchanter and you get this like extra disenchant if you just need an extra disenchant. So I really like this card. I think this card's a 4. I think it's going to see enough play in the 2-color and maybe even 3-color decks that it warrants Witch Enchanter being a 4.
I'm still calling this a 3. I think 4 mana is a lot for the creature effect.
I think I'm still going to go with 3 only because I don't think there's enough mono and white and 2-color white decks that are really great in CDH that actually want this. You know what I mean?
Not anymore.
But
now they're great.
Yeah, maybe that's all going to change after Modern Horizons 3. Truly, I don't know. But like, what's the best 2-color white deck that would use this? Something like Winota would use this, and Winota really isn't that great anymore. Something like
the Heliod flips to blue.
I think that's a good thing overall. Like the decks that aren't the most strong are getting effects like this. I just don't think this is going to see a ton of play because the best decks are not going to be able to play something like this.
You know what's funny is that on the Q&A the other week, we were talking about how it's really hard to make cards that will benefit the low 1 and 2 color decks without powering up the 4 and 5 color decks. But like, this is actually a pretty cool way that you can really give a boost to these other decks where now they can like shave lands and actually play more spells in their decks too. So
yeah, I agree. This is a great way to boost the lower color. Yes. Yeah.
All right. That's interesting. We did not give a rating to Static Prison. Would you like to?
I think that one is closer to a 4, actually. I like that card a lot. I think that card could see play in 4-color decks.
That's a 4.5. I think that card is going to see a pretty high amount of play.
Well, how about you? What do you think?
I think you guys are fucking crazy.
You don't think it's that good? I think it's better than Assassin's Trophy.
I think it's worse than Assassin's Trophy.
Assassin's Trophy is an instant. It's close, though.
Two mana. Yeah, one mana is 100% less than 2 mana.
I think I phrased that right. I think that's technically right.
Spot where like the more I'm okay with 2 mana counters, the more I'm kind of okay with 2 mana removal spells too, because I'd rather have something that's going to be more versatile that I can do at an instant speed as well. So I don't know. It's still worse than Swords to Plowshares, and normally Swords to Plowshares is the only white mana on the board creature removal spell that I'm playing, and this is not better than Swords to Plowshares. I'm not cutting my instant speed bounce spells for it. So if you're in non-blue, maybe a 4-color deck would.
But
want
this also hits anything, right? It's not just creature removal. It removes One Rings. It removes everything.
One Rings is huge. I think this is much better at clearing shit out of the way for you to win than it is at stopping your opponents from winning. Because it's not instant speed, it's not great at shutting off Underworld Breach or stopping your opponents from Birthing Potting or anything like that, but it is very good at making sure that anything that you need off the board is off the board for as small amount as possible, basically.
Yeah, I know. I'd rather still remove that thing on my opponent's end step, come into my turn with that open mana no matter what.
Well, what do you rate it then?
I'm going to give it a 3. Like, I think it's still good. I think it's still going to see play, but I don't think it's going to become like a staple of the format that many decks in white and multiple other colors are going to be playing.
Clip that.
Do you want to remind me on this one? Because when we review these cards at the end of the year and I get to laugh at both of your asses about this, right. I can't wait. All right, Wrath of the Skies is X and 2 white for a sorcery that says you get X energy, then you may pay any amount of energy and destroy each artifact, creature, and enchantment with mana value less than or equal to the amount of energy paid this way.
This one is kind of expensive. You have to pay the mana in X. You still have to do that, which is a lot, but it also gets rid of a lot of different things.
But it's symmetrical, and you're probably doing this for at least 2. At 2, it still doesn't feel that great. Like, everyone who's resolved the Culling Ritual knows half the appeal is the mana. It's not, you're not hitting everything you want to, usually. So I think most of the time, to hit everything you want to, it's going to cost 5, and because it's a symmetrical effect, that's probably also going to suck for you. I think this just isn't it. To me, this is like a 1.5.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think very specific decks will enjoy having access to something like this. Probably going to do a lot in casual games, but I agree. In CDH, it's probably just not worth the payoff. It does a lot. I don't think we have anything that gets rid of this quite this many things at this rate. So it's interesting because of that. Something like Shorokai or a low color white control deck might want something like this, but that's not a lot of decks.
I think this would really only be good if Dr. Madison Lee becomes CEDH viable. Like, I think you would actively want to be in an energy deck to make this good, because if you can make this 2 mana Wrath the board and leave my Planeswalker in play or something, like, that's an amazing situation
to be
in.
That's true.
So you don't necessarily need to like have this be your only energy card. If you can build around energy a little bit more, I think that's where this power will shine. But unless Dr. Madison Lee becomes CEDH like tier 3, tier 2 or something, I don't know that we would see this card until then.
Yeah, you kind of have to be in the energy strategy to make it work. That makes sense.
But we're very close to Dr. Madison Lee actually being like something that you can do very realistically in CEDH. There's going to be some other energy cards that we'll talk about that maybe will change our opinion about this, but we'll see.
Would we rate it? Did we rate it?
Tyler gave it a low rating.
1.5.
I think I'm kind of around there too.
I'm going to say 1.5 as well. And
yeah,
if
1.5.
But Madison Lee, again, that would bring this card up to a 3 technically because a deck is playing it. Maybe a 2.5 at its peak.
At its peak. Okay. Yeah.
All right. We're going to move on to blue and talk about Consign to Memory. This is a blue mana instant with Replicate 1, which means that you can pay 1 extra generic mana to copy the spell for each time that you replicate it. And it says counter target triggered ability or colorless spell. This is a wild one.
Yeah, this is better than Stifle.
This is immediately better than Stifle straight up.
Stifle stops activated abilities.
Is it only activated?
No, Stifle stops activated and triggered abilities, but this one only triggered abilities.
This one's only triggered, but it also counters colorless spells. I think that's better for CDH for what we want. We want to stop the triggered abilities more than the activated abilities, and stopping colorless spells is extra helpful.
I think the only colorless spell that you're realistically ever countering is the One Ring. Yeah. That's it. There are no other. Yes, that makes it pretty good. I still don't think it's enough better than Stifle that this gets run when Stifle doesn't.
Yeah, that's probably true. I just think it's better than Stifle. So my point is just going to be we don't play Stifle. We still not might play this, but I'm more interested in this than I am in Stifle, me personally, because countering the One Ring I do think is huge. And there's some very small situations where countering a Sensei's Dividing Top when you know it's part of a combo or an Aetherflux Reservoir or you're facing off against some weird artifact deck and it is helpful, that might come up more often than I think the activated ability will come up. I don't want to do the fetch land thing in CDH. That's never good. I don't really want to counter that in CDH. That's not good for us.
There are a couple of other like artifact win conditions too. Technically Grinding Station is one.
Lion's Eye Diamond, that's not helpful really, because Underworld Breach is already, they get it back.
But like Isochron Scepter is also a win condition. Cloudstone Curiosities play in decks that want to loop Dockside. So like there are very niche scenarios that you do have a colorless spell you want to counter. Again, like you said, I'm not interested in Stifle. I'm still not interested in this too, but if I am trying to find a way to counter a triggered ability, this is probably going to be the one that I look to.
Yeah, I think this is another good one, but it's not going to see. This is another one that two color decks are going to be interested in, but the high four color decks, I don't think I'm quite as interested in.
I don't like silver bullets in CEDH, and that's what this is to a T. So I'm giving it a 1 because I'm not going to put it in any of my decks, I don't think.
I'm going to say this is also 1.5. I'm also going to say what I've said before, I think two other times on the channel. At this point, still, if we're going to run a spell that counters an activated or triggered ability, it's still Tail's End. It's not this. It's not any of the other ones we've talked about over the years. It's Tail's End.
Okay, yeah, I think I pretty much agree. I'm going to give it like a 1.6 because I want to be different and unique.
And we've broken in the tenths. All right, here we go.
Oh, man. Well, now that we've warmed that up, let's really get into this. All right, Flare of Denial. 1 and 2 blue for an instant that says you may sacrifice a non-token blue creature rather than paying this spell's mana cost to counter target spell.
Fellas, are free counter spells good?
Free counter spells are good.
But is this free?
Is this one good?
This one is. That's the question, Cameron. Good call.
I think some decks will love this. I think specifically Yuriko loves this card because you sack Yuriko. You can put Yuriko back in with Commander Ninjutsu. That's fine. I think maybe a Thrasios deck might like this.
I also think Malcolm decks are probably going to run this because they often run like incidental little idiot pirates like Siren Storm Tamer, that kind of thing. Carmen, who piloted Femboy Farm to top 4 at our recent Play to Win event, is trying this out in Femboy Farm. I do think this is reasonable in decks that are already running some blue creatures that you don't care about. There just aren't many of those, like you're saying.
Yeah.
What makes Force of Will really good is that you don't need to cast the other spell that you pitch to cast this one for free. But Flare of Denial does require a mana investment, and it requires a non-token blue creature. Like, that is so freaking specific, and there's not really many times that you're thing gets gilded draked and now you actually have something that you want to sacrifice.
It feels between Force of Will because you have to go down a card and it's free, and it also feels like Fierce Guardianship where you have to put the thing in play before you can do it, but it doesn't have the benefit of not having to lose the card when you put the thing in for free, nor does it have the benefit of you being able to play it on turn one. So it's kind of got like the best of both worlds, but really like the worst of both worlds. It's so strange because it's a free counterspell. It's going to see play. I know it's going to see play. I'm just not sure where yet, and it's not in every deck. It's only in certain decks.
I think it's only those little decks, and I think also if this cost was like, you know, reasonable to pay, we would probably see Abjur see a lot more play.
What's Abjur?
Abjur is a very good counterspell. It is a one mana counterspell that says sacrifice a creature as an additional cost.
No, it's sacrifice a blue permanent.
I'm sorry, a blue permanent.
So you can get rid of your Rhystic Study.
So I used to run this in Talrand, but like my point is, if this was a reasonable cost, people would probably already be running this blue counterspell that costs one mana to counter anything.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
Really, the best case scenario for it is that you have your Thassa's Oracle Demonic Consultation on the stack. Someone goes to counter that, you can sacrifice your Thoracol and your trigger's still on the stack, but... do you want to play a card just for that?
I think you're on the market. This is like a 4 in Yuriko and like a 2 in every other deck.
So I think that makes it a 3.
I was gonna give it
like... That's not how weighted averages work.
I was going to give it like a 2.2242242. Sorry, that was for Tyler.
Okay. So then that will average together and that will be a 2.666664... Two.
Our next card.
It's around a 2, 2.5.
Our next card is Harbinger of the Seas. This is 1 and 2 blue for a creature merfolk wizard 2/2 that says non-basic lands are islands.
Woof, this is a card.
This is a card.
Yeah, this is a card that's much more interesting. Although Magus doesn't see quite as play anymore, blue islands is different than mountains. I don't know. This is going to shut off a lot of different types of decks. This doesn't have the issue of Dockside being able to help you out also, which was like a big issue with the Blood Moon effects. Is like it turns all your shit into mountains, but you can still cast Dockside and then get out of the mana issue.
One of the factors that makes Blood Moon not that popular right now, Blood Moon and Magus of the Moon, which is that a lot of mana is artifact based, and this does not stop those artifacts from producing colored mana, but you can't still cast a Dockside through it. Locking your opponents into mostly one color usually is pretty good, and it punishes high color decks a lot more. So I think there are some low color decks that are going to want this. I'm on the fence in Kinnan, to be honest. I almost want to try it because Kinnan is a deck that is probably capable of putting it out on turn 2 a lot, and that really fucks shit up.
And you can flip into it, right?
I could flip into it, yeah.
That's a surprise one. When you get a surprise, all your lands are islands, that can really fuck people up.
Yeah, but... slots are tight. I don't know if it's going to actually stick, but we'll see.
I think this card sucks more than Blood Moon and Magus of the Moon.
Why is that?
Because if you take a look at my decks, the majority of my 4 and 5 color decks are mostly blue. So I'm not really locked out of the majority of my spells. Not only that, a lot of my blue spells are bounce spells. And that's a hell of a lot more answers than just having one copy of Dockside Extortionist in your deck or your one Ragavan that's making you a treasure a turn, which is not getting you out of the scenario really at all. So being more difficult to cast than either of those two other spells and not shutting out as many decks that Blood Moon and Magus do, I think this card is still going to see play, but I think ultimately it is worse than Magus of the Moon.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Everything you said makes sense.
That was well thought out.
I do agree with you in a lot of ways. The only card counter argument that I have, which is a stupid one, is that it's blue, which makes it good because it's blue.
You can pitch it to Force of Will.
Not only can you pitch it to Force of Will, but you're already playing a better color in blue, and that's just a good
color.
That's
true, and you can sacrifice it to Flare of Denial when you need to, like, you know?
But you're probably right. Most of these cards we've talked about are great in two color decks, and outside of that, I'm less interested, right? This is the same thing as, like, if I'm playing most two color decks, I think I would look at this card.
Honestly,
if I'm blue black, I'm going to think about this one. Yeah, could I get away with it? It could be easy. I don't know.
Again, like Shorkai, like, if I'm just trying to extend the life of the board a little bit longer until I get to humility, like, this seems like a great thing to have.
Yeah, it can combine well with a couple of other different things nicely, which is good. It's not going to see a ton of top table play. I think it's still like a 3 for me, though.
I think it's still a 3. I'm still okay giving it a 3.
Yeah, 3, 2.5, 3. Yeah. Since you're doing this, I guess we'll go 2.7 or something.
Like... nice. We want him over.
Yeah. Finally got you there.
I don't know about that.
All right, let's talk about the Hydroelectric Specimen. This thing just sounds dangerous. This is 2 and a blue for a 1/4 weird with flash, and when it enters the battlefield, you can change the target of target instant or sorcery spell with a single target to Hydroelectric Specimen. And it's also a land on the bag.
Look at that.
It will come into play untapped if you pay 3 life.
You have some thoughts about this, and I'm curious on them.
I don't love this one. I think the number of times that comes up, because it's narrower than Deflecting Swat, right? In terms of when you're actually likely to use it, especially because you have to be holding up 3 mana for it. If you're in a position to be holding up 3 mana, like, just because then you're not doing anything on your turn probably most of the time. So I think this one is not that great. I still think certainly mono blue decks and some two color decks will want it, but I'm not even going to try this one in Kinnan.
This is a great Nimrus card.
I was going to say, what about like the dream situation where you have Kinnan out and seven untapped mana and someone goes to Swords of Plowshare your Kinnan and you activate Kinnan in response and you hit this thing, your land that you can redirect to Swords of Plowshare somewhere else.
Yeah, no.
Like, isn't that good?
I don't think we should always be judging cards based on the best case magical Christmas land scenario.
No, not every time, but we got to bring it up. I agree with you. It's really hard to leave up three mana, but a creature is much more difficult to interact with on the stack than other counterspells.
So I think in those scenarios where you don't want to hold up three mana, you just play it as a land instead, which means that there's no downside to this card, like, at all. The only downside is that maybe your mana base can't handle it, and that's really, like, the only reason that I wouldn't play it in, like, two-color blue decks at that point.
Yeah, I agree. In four-color decks and three-color decks, you really only get, like, one slot, maybe two, for a land that only produces one color, and that's normally, like, a basic and an Odawara. You just don't have room for another one of these as the land.
Even then, you don't even have room for a basic a lot of the time.
Right,
either.
Yeah. But if for a two-color deck, again, we're saying a lot of the same stuff. If I'm in a two-color blue deck, I definitely am considering this, as long as I'm not in Polymorph and as long as, you know, it doesn't matter that I have creatures in my deck. I think this is like a fine include. It's a great land.
Yeah, I'm calling this a 2.
2, okay.
Yeah, this is probably like a 2.5 in my mind.
I think it's a 2.5. I think this has high potential, but I agree. 3 mana is so much.
I would be thinking about this one if it weren't for
Sink into Stupor, which is 1/2 blue for an instant that says return target spell or non-land permanent an opponent controls to its owner's hand. And it's also a land that can be untapped if you pay 3 life.
This one's great.
This one is, like, magical.
4.5, no notes.
Yeah,
this is so good.
This is great. 3 mana is still a little bit high for this effect, but the versatility of spell versus permanent is really great.
It answers so many things. This is fantastic. It is immediately going in. I would say up to 3-color blue decks are probably still running this.
I think so, too. Yeah, I would maybe be a little bit surprised if a 4-color deck was playing something like this. I don't know that I want this in Atraxa, really. I don't know. It is kind of interesting. Atraxa being specifically, like, needing different card types, it is nice to know that instead of a land, you could hit an extra instant or sorcery, but you're often going to be taking like a tutor or a counter spell. I think this is a great card. I do think I give it around a 4. I don't know if that's a 4.5,
it's
but
a 4. No, you're right.
I think a lot of decks will play it. I certainly think it'll see play at competitive tables for sure.
I don't know about this one. I'm curious to hear what you two have to say about this.
Imagine if there was one that you're like, I don't care what you guys have to say about this one. Actually, shut the fuck up.
Oh, no, I know what card that is already.
Okay.
Trick Serenade is a blue for an instant that says counter target artifact creature or planeswalker spell. Its controller creates a 2/2 blue bird creature token with flying. The opposite of Swan Song.
Is this good? Part of me goes, this is a staple. It's an instant staple. And part of me goes, this is not what I want out of a counter spell. It doesn't hit other counter spells.
I feel like that makes it a trap. Like, you look at it and you go, oh, it can hit Dockside and it can hit the One Ring. 100% of times that we've talked about cards on this channel that are, oh, this card deals with a list of cards, they don't see play. And if they do, they don't see play in top 16 tables. They're seeing play in, like, your pod because you know that your opponents are playing specific spells that this is good against, right? Then this is just another one of these cards that's just, well, it hits this laundry list of different things. That doesn't make it good. The counterspells need to be versatile. They need to be able to get you out of a counter war.
I'm not positive, but I think this is very straightforward, actually. If you are running Stern Scolding in your deck, take it out, replace it with this card. If you are not running Stern Scolding in your deck, do not run this card.
That is a great if this then that sentence for this card. I 100% agree.
That was a lot more positive than what I had to say. That was nice, yeah.
I think this card is closer to second-rate removal spells. So something like a Dismember or a Path to Exile, I think this is about as powerful as those cards are. I love Dismember. It's one of my favorite cards, but you don't need a ton of creature interaction. You just don't need a ton. I think having this in place of a Path to Exile when you already run Swords to Plowshare, I like thinking of it more like that than I do thinking of it as a counter spell.
So you would, in your mono blue decks, replace like Pognify with this then?
If I was playing Rapid and Pognify, I think I would. Otherwise, yeah, maybe. I don't know. Is this better than Pognify?
Maybe the thought process is you have bounce spells that will deal with the things in play.
Yeah.
And then if you just need more things to deal with things on the stack and to use with your open mana, this is something to do with that then.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if you're in mono blue, it's hard because you're probably playing a couple extra hard counter spells. You might be playing more
true.
Likely to be playing delay and mana drain where you have already like ways to deal with like creatures and stuff. I don't know. This one's hard for me. I do think it's a powerful card. I'm definitely going to give it like at least a 3.5. If this saw no play, I don't know that I'd be that surprised.
I think I'm giving it a 2 because there's only 2 card types at this counters.
Yeah.
Because fuck Planeswalkers.
Planeswalkers are really not.
That's
just
never
not,
happening.
Yeah, the dreamland of countering a Narset or countering...
I mean, 3-mana Teferi.
3-mana
Teferi. Up with the kitten combo,
yeah, that's true.
But...
Okay.
I still
we
say
found
3.
One. We found one.
And I stick by what I said about Stern Scolding.
What do you rate this card?
3. Yeah.
3. I think I'm going to go from 3.5. I think I said I'm going to go closer to 3.
3.32 for
closer
me.
Closer to,
then,
but
yeah.
Not touching.
Not close. Yeah, 3.01 for me.
All right, there we go. So that's Strix Serenade. Our last blue spell is Volatile Storm Drake. This is 1 and a blue for a Drake that's a 3-2. It has flying and hexproof from both activated and triggered abilities. Cool. When it enters the battlefield, exchange control of it and target creature and opponent controls. If you do, you get 4 energy. Then sacrifice that creature unless you pay an amount of energy equal to its mana value.
Guys, do you know what my favorite magic card is?
Gilded Drake, of course.
No, that's not correct. It's Scheherazade. But my favorite legal magic card is Gilded Drake.
All right.
And This is Gilded Drake in CDH as far as CDH is concerned, basically. There are some rare times, maybe with a Chrome, I would say, where you want to be hitting something that's more than 4 CMC and it's going to feel like this sucks, but this is pretty fucking exciting. I'm really excited about it in Kinnan, in part specifically because when Kinnan hits, you know, huge creatures, it wants to keep them. And this is one where I don't really have to be scared of it stealing huge creatures, so I'm not that scared of my opponents having this card. It sucks if they steal Kinnan, but it doesn't put me in the position where I'm losing my Void Winnower. So it really feels like this is just an excellent Kinnan card.
Are you going to say that this is Chainer's Edict?
Yeah, this is better than we think it is even at first glance because they can take the thing, and if they don't have the energy to pay it, they sacrifice the creature.
Wait a minute, what? Did I read this wrong?
Yep. If you do, you get 4 energy, then sacrifice that creature unless you pay an amount of energy equal to its mana value.
So you can take the big thing and just sacrifice it.
You could even steal Kinnan, decide not to spend any energy, and use your energy on the wrath that you're saving up for later.
It's so interesting because when I first read it, I read it like that, and then I realized that, no, at its worst, it still can kill anything, more or less.
It's like, so funny because it's still an homage to Gilded Drake, yeah. Because if something happens, you have to sacrifice Gilded Drake if it has no target, but this just threw that inverse right around and said, no, fuck your creature, and instead.
Wow, this is even better than I realized.
Yeah,
holy
this is
shit.
This is great. I think this is obviously a super include for Kinnan. I don't know. I mean, Gilded Drake has lost a little bit of popularity recently. Is this better than Gilded Drake? I don't know that it's better than Gilded Drake because Gilded Drake could take whatever, but Gilded Drake couldn't kill anything.
But this also has hexproof from abilities and stuff too. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Which doesn't work against Ward like I thought it was supposed to.
Oh, yeah. Ward is something that's on the stack.
Triggers happen independently of their sources, I think, is what we decided is the reason.
Yes.
Which is a little bit frustrating to me because this feels like you should be able to take things that have ward and not pay the ward. That's not the case, I think. But still, I think this is a good card. Is it as good as Gilded Drake or better, do you think?
It might be better.
It might be better.
It might be better.
You can just kill the thing.
You can just kill
the
thing.
You can choose to just kill the thing.
Well, not really, because Gilded Drake, no matter what, you would rather... Well, sometimes you don't want to control the big thing.
Think about Stax creatures. Like, Gilded Drake, sure, great, now I control that Stax creature, but like I still don't want that effect on the battlefield. This does open up an entire different avenue of interacting with some kinds of threats.
And you don't have to sack the thing only if it's big. This can just take an Archon of Emyria and you can just sack the Archon of Emyria. You can just choose to kill it. Gilded Drake can never get rid of an Archon of Emyria. It can only change controls of it. This might be better than Gilded Drake.
I think it's probably going to depend on where the meta is at because if Stax is better, I like Volatile Storm Drake better. But if Tivit's seen more play, I want Gilded Drake to take Tivit's.
But even still, Ward, a Gilded Drake taking a Tivit is 5 fucking mana. That's
but
awful.
So would this be. Like,
right. I'm saying, yeah, they're
what
not
I'm saying is, like,
Tivit.
I don't want to give certain decks the ability to sacrifice their thing and be able to recast their commander again because of a really good ETB trigger. Like, if I'm playing against Atraxa, maybe that's a better example. I'd rather be able to steal Atraxa permanently than, like, have a removal spell for Atraxa.
Yes.
So it probably depends on where you're at in your meta and where, like, we are at in general. But I think there is a lot of scenarios where this is going to be better than Gilded Drake.
I think I'm going to give this one a 4.5.
This is a 4.5 for sure.
4.8. Easy.
4.8. You know what? I am going to amend mine. I'm going to say a 4.81.
Wow, 4.82 for me. I amend mine.
Wait, I'm amending mine. It's going to be a 4.83.
We only get one amendment, and he beat us. Damn it! We didn't think about that.
Damn it.
Is this the best card we've talked about so far?
So far, this is. Yeah, so far, this is. Actually, there's been a lot of lower ratings than I thought that there would be up until now, but this card does definitely take the cake for best so far. Shall we move on to black?
Let's do it.
So, Boggart Trawler is 3 and a black for a goblin 3/1 that enters the battlefield and exiles target player's graveyard. It is also a land, and it can enter the battlefield untapped.
Bajookabog. This is Bajookabog, but way, way, way better.
Did you say better?
I think so.
Oh, because it can
be a land that enters untapped.
Yeah, but Bajookabog just does it without costing 3 mana.
Yeah, I guess
it's
all right. You're right. Free. It's not exactly, but this feels playable in CDH where Bajookabog doesn't.
Yeah, I'm never playing Bajookabog in CEDH, and I might sometimes play Boggart Trawler.
Yeah.
You only want this effect if you know that your opponent is in a reanimate strategy or has Underworld Breach and is going for a breach line imminently.
The effect is not great.
Yeah, I feel like we're once again in the situation where I think this only goes in mono black decks. I don't even think like two color decks are really going to want this one.
It's a shame because so the only thing that I'm thinking is something like a green black hand disruption deck. Something like...
Oh, that very popular strategy. Like Nath?
Nath. Something like Nath would want something like this, where you're purposefully, you know, making your opponents discard and destroy things, but that strategy is not good.
The discard decks being Tiny Bones.
Right.
Maybe Turgrid, if Turgrid is something that people are playing.
Turgrid could be in some. Turgrid would love this effect, probably, because it's a monocolor black
deck.
These
are all fringe decks that we're talking about, but this is good. We want cards to make these fringe decks better.
I want to play this in something like a Blood Pot or something like that, because I would want like a creature that deals with some, that stops my opponents from doing something.
It's a Tymna attacker.
Right, yeah, you know, but I don't think it's there on power level, unfortunately. I don't really want to cut a land in my four-color deck for this.
Again, like, it's very expensive on the side to exile a graveyard, so maybe a Tevish deck that's playing Skull Clamp might want this because
sure.
It's body.
Is it a 3/1?
It's a 3/1, yeah. You can sacrifice it pretty handily for something like that and get extra cards. So, but the second that I play a third color,
you heard it here first, folks. Maybe a Tevish deck that is playing Skull Clamp. Watch this.
There's a ton of different decks out there.
That's a 2.
You're giving it a 2? Yeah, I think it's around a 2.5 because I think these lands will play better than they feel. But yeah, it's not the best.
I think I'm with you. I think this is probably a 2. But the decks that are playing Agadeem's Awakening have a better chance of winning this, I think.
Agadeem's Reanimate
stuff.
Yeah,
Reanimate's
3 black and X. Nobody does that. Chthonian Nightmare is 1 and a black for an enchantment that when it enters the battlefield, you get 3 energy, and you can pay X energy and sacrifice it and return it to your hand to return target creature card with mana value X from your graveyard to the battlefield. Activate this as a sorcery. Dylan, take it away.
This combos with Dockside Extortionist.
Hooray!
As long as you have a creature in your graveyard already and the creature is like 1 or 2 mana and Dockside makes 5, I think it's creature in graveyard, 5 treasures, and cast the Dockside and this the Nightmare, and you can go from there.
So you need to be able to make 5 treasures with Dockside, and the creature that you have can have up to 3 CMC because Chthonian Nightmare will need to be able to get it back within the loop. And because Dockside costs 2, like, you will get some extra energy. This loop will also give you infinite energy if that's something you want.
So long as the other creature is 2 mana or less. If it's 3 mana, you need to use all of that energy?
Well, when you do it on Dockside, you still net an energy then 2 because you're gaining 3 only using 2 then. So you still can get infinite energy, but you're going to win the game with something else before you want any energy.
This is great. I think Rakdos decks are going to love this as another way to loop with Dockside. If you have an outlet in the command zone, if you're playing even something like a Thrasios or a Kenrith, I think Kenrith might be interested in something like this. You already have a plethora of Dockside lines. Having extra ways to reanimate stuff might be pretty good.
Is this more efficient and easier than the Emile line?
More efficient and easier. That's tough. Emile is so easy to explain and it's right all on board and it's right here. This I do think is more efficient, but you still need that other creature somewhere. But
putting another creature in the graveyard doesn't always happen. I've won a silly amount of games off just, Dockside just made me a funny amount of mana and I just like was able to just cast one other spell and win the game. So like the potential for a setup cost, I don't think would make me want to cut Emile, but it would definitely make me just go, this is just like better than any other piece that I could be using to get infinite mana with Dockside.
I like this more than like the Baron Master Wizards and some of those other extra Dockside stuff.
I think so too. They're all fragile.
It makes you a lot more scared of Docksides in graveyards than we currently are.
That's true. The Dockside doesn't need to be in your hand. The Dockside doesn't need to be in your deck to find. It can be already in your graveyard or something too, and you can go from there.
We should all be playing Boggart Trawler in all of our black decks then, so that we can get Docksides out of graveyards.
There you go. Now that card's way better, yeah.
I think it's going to be very evident why Recurring Nightmare is a banned card in Commander, because of Chthonian Nightmare here, so I'm very excited to see what all this card does. This card's probably a 4.85, I would say.
Interesting, okay. I think this is like a 4.5 for me. I think this is a great card. I'm not sure if it goes in all of the decks. I don't know if it's an instant as good as Emil, but my gut tells me this is like just under Emil, and Emil I give like a 4.8. So for me, this is like maybe a 4.7, I'll give it.
I'm calling this a 4, personally.
A 4?
4.3.
Feld the Profane is 2/2 black for an instant that destroys a creature or planeswalker, and it's also a land! Is that still funny? Are we still doing that
bit? No, it's not
funny
anymore. It's not good.
All right, I'm going to stop doing that
bit. I don't know. You committed for, like, this far.
I know.
This one is the strongest effect, but 4 mana is quite a bit.
I still think this is pretty strong.
I like this card.
I think this one gets played for sure.
I would play this in 3-color decks, I think. I think I would play this in... not Grixis decks, but I would play this in like an Abzan deck.
An Esper deck.
I think this is closer to playable. That creature removal, it's going to come up more than some of the other ones, just flat out. The creature doesn't have to be attacking. It doesn't have to be any situation. I think it's good.
I think I'm a little surprised they made it an instant speed removal spell too. Like the fact that it's not held back by sorcery speed does make this even better. So I think this is a 4.5. It's just so good.
I'll say a flat 4 for this.
I think I'm closer to like a 3.5 to 4 range, whereas I don't know it'll see play in all the high tier decks, but I do think a lot of decks are going to be interested. Dimir, any Talion is going to love something like this. This is like the best card for Talion. I think this is awesome. Yuriko is another all-star. A lot of these cards, I'm saying a lot of the same things. 2-color decks love most of these cards. 3-color decks love some of them. This is one of the best ones we've seen. So yeah, I'll give it like a 3.8.
Flare of Malice is 2/2 black for an instant that says you may sacrifice a non-token black creature rather than pay the spell's mana cost, and each opponent sacrifices a creature or planeswalker with the greatest mana value among creatures and planeswalkers they control.
The thing that's disappointing is that black is probably the color that would have the easiest time justifying sacrificing a creature. There's often synergies there. It's just not the greatest effect because it has no precision, right? You'd have to just hope this is going to hit the thing that you want to hit most on your opponent's boards. And this isn't, you know, casual where it's like, oh yeah, I got rid of everyone's biggest creature. Like in CDH, you know, their biggest creature in this sense is not necessarily the one that's the biggest problem.
Yeah, that's true. This is the only flare though that doesn't directly card disadvantage yourself though, because you are hopefully getting rid of 3 things for your 2 things that you go down, which I think is a pretty good rate. I like that rate of investing no mana, losing 2 cards myself, and getting rid of 3 of my opponent's things in the early game. I think that could be really good, but I definitely see what you're saying. The lack of control makes it much less interesting. I do think this card is good, though. I'm looking forward to trying something like this. I just, again, I'm not sure which decks can play this, because you want to be able to cast it consistently, which to me, my mind goes, well, your commander has got to be like 2 mana or less, and I want to get rid of it often for when we want to play this. What deck is that? That deck doesn't really exist. So the effect is powerful and really strong. I just don't know what deck can play it yet.
If you're in casual and you're playing Glister the Traitor, this card's awesome.
Maybe Tyum? Does Tyum want this?
You know, yeah, you could, like, yeah, sock your Dothy or your Bowmaster, get it back.
Tyum doesn't run that many black creatures, though.
Yeah, not a ton. That's another issue. Tyum itself, but then you can't use Tyum to get it back, so that kind of defeats the purpose.
No, Bowmaster's probably the best creature to sacrifice, because when you do get it back, you get another trigger, but I don't know. This one's really tough.
Yeah, this one's tough. I think I'm going to give this one closer to, like, a 3-ish. I still think it's good. I'm not sure where, but I think it's powerful. Card.
I think I'm going to give it a 2.5. This is the best flare that we've talked about so far, but I don't know about it.
It's close with the blue one.
The blue one, the effect is so much stronger.
The effect's stronger, but no,
there's less blue
like
creatures.
One deck's
going
to play it. Yeah.
There are more decks that want to play Stitcher Supplier and weird little shit like that, I think.
I'm happy to give this a 2.75 or something.
Dude, Stitcher Supplier. Yeah, like Mardu decks play that card out the yin-yang for some reason. Yeah, this is great with if you're doing stuff like that.
Yeah, specific decks will enjoy it just fine.
Grim Servant is 3 black for a zombie warlock. That's a 3/2. It's got menace, and when it enters the battlefield, you search your library for a...
card with mana value less than or equal to your devotion to black. Then you reveal it and put it into your hand and shuffle, but you lose 3 life.
I mean, it's a tutor, which already I'm looking at. It's a tutor on a body, which is always great. It's a tutor on a body that can find Ephemerate, which is always good because that means a couple extra tutors. I think this card is something. There's a line to win with this, and I can't remember what it is, but it has to do with Ephemerate.
But Ephemerate only blinks once initially, right? So then it's just replacing the tutor that you already spent on Ephemerate.
You find Ephemerate, and then you tutor it. Ephemerate, you're a guy, and you find something else. And then on your upkeep, you flicker it again. And I just don't remember what you find with the...
Oh, so you have to get to your
upkeep. You have to get to your next turn, which maybe that makes it not playable.
That takes us from being a one-card win condition to being bad, right? Like, what made Spellseeker work with that line is that you got to go find Final Fortune and then cast Final Fortune and immediately go get your Ephemerate rebound. So I think saying, oh, I'm going to pass the turn while everyone knows that Ephemerate's going to target Grim Savant is just asking for someone to remove it.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I wish I knew what the actual line was right now so we could actually talk about it. Someone messaged me on Discord, I think, but I don't have a way to check my Discord besides turning my computer on. Should I do that quick?
I feel like probably. If there's a line, we should know it.
ETB, find Ephemerate, flicker, find consult, next upkeep, find Vamp Tutor, cast in upkeep, find Thorable.
So I think the line is, with this, you find Ephemerate. You Ephemerate this to find Demonic Consultation. You wait until your next upkeep. When Ephemerate flickers in your upkeep, you find Vampiric Tutor. And with Vampiric Tutor, you find Thassa's Oracle. And then on that turn, you win. But then you have to wait a whole turn cycle. Is that worth it? You can probably include the whole rant that you had before right there, to be honest. And if you want to add anything else, go for it.
So that all being said, I don't know where I see this card in the reality of CEDH. I think it's going to be maybe a 1.5. I think maybe Crick might want something like this, but even then, this is a 3 mana specific tutor for Crick because it only has 1 black pip. I feel like they knew about that when they made this thing, so.
Yeah, well, if Crick is already out, then this can find more stuff because it's your devotion, right? I mean, it's a tutor on a body. That's something to look at. There's going to be combo lines that can abuse this, I'm sure. That's just like the nature of what this type of effect is, but it seems like it's a pretty balanced version of the effect, honestly.
I think so too, yeah.
I still think it's like a 2, but in the right deck, it'll be a win condition and it'll feel like a fucking 5.
2.1.
Okay. There we go. All right. Necro Dominance is 3 black for a legendary enchantment that says skip your draw step. It also says at the beginning of your end step, you may pay any amount of life. And if you drew, you draw that many cards.
Different than Necropotence.
Yep, you got that right. You may have a maximum hand size of 5. That's not what that says. It's not a may ability. You're forced to have that. And then if a card or token would be put into your graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. That's interesting because that means that that's a replacement effect so that tokens won't go to the graveyard. So any kind of like Mayhem Devil kind of shenanigans won't let your treasures deal damage.
What does it say again? I thought it's if you discard a card.
If a card would be put into your graveyard from anywhere is where it says
okay,
that.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So this is similar to Necropotence, a little bit different. That 5 cards in hand restriction is kind of relevant sometimes. Necro can be fair, and this limits its fair capabilities. But having a second Necropotence is huge, even if it does limit it. I really like this with Final Fortune. I really like this with Born Upon the Wind. If you are drawing a whole big bunch of cards and then your end step, while you have access to all those cards before you have to discard, casting Born Upon the Wind and casting all your stuff, or casting Final Fortune, sculpting a perfect 5 this time and then winning right away. I think this is just like another piece of the puzzle. The Rog'Sai decks are going to love this. Rog'Sai is one of the best, if not the best deck in the format, and I'm almost positive it will play this card.
Yeah, any deck that is running Necropotence probably just wants to add Necro Dominance to their list then too. We keep getting a bunch more ways to win on your end step with one of these kind of effects in play. So if we're just going to have 2 Necros and 5 ways that you can win on your end step with it, yeah, this kind of effect is just like exactly what you're going
to
want.
Important things to note that you are actually drawing the cards, whereas Necropotence, you don't actually draw the cards. So things like Orcish Bowmaster will be bad against you. Things like Shieldred will be bad against you. But if you control your own Shieldred, then it'll be really, really fucking good.
That's also true.
So there's pros and cons for sure, but you're actually drawing the cards. It's like a fixed Necropotence, but I still think this one, I want to say a worse job of fixing it than the last card we talked about, but it's still broken, I think. I think this card's still broken.
It's still busted for sure.
I definitely agree. This is a 4.9.
To me, this is a 5. I think this is going to be a staple in some of the best decks in the format. I wouldn't be surprised if a couple blue farms plays this. Even if you are already playing Necropotence, I really just think having a second one is good. So you don't have to tutor for it then as much. You can just have it.
I hate to say it, but I do agree. This is probably the best card we've talked about so far. I'll call it a 4.8.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Definitely best card we've talked about so far. All right, let's move on to red. We have Ashlyn Flame Dancer. This is 2 and 2 red for an Elemental Shaman that's legendary. It's a 4/4 and says you don't lose unspent red mana as steps and phases end. It has Magecraft. For whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, you discard a card, then draw a card. If it's the second time this ability has resolved this turn, then you deal 2 damage to each opponent and each creature that they control. And if it's the third time, then you add 4 red. So can we clarify something? The third time you activate this, yeah, Magecraft, you get 4 red and deal 2 damage to everything and...
Is that how it's worded? I think it's worded the second time you do it, you get blah.
If it's the second time this ability has resolved this turn, then it deals 2 damage to each creature and each opponent.
You always discard draw. On the second time, you do the 2 damage thing. On the third time, you discard draw and do the mana, but not the damage to everything.
Oh, how's a discard draw worded?
Oh, that's interesting. Yes.
Whenever you cast your copy, you discard a card, then draw a card.
And then if it's the second time, you do this.
If it's the second time, there's this additional effect. Okay. If there's the third time, instead, there's this additional effect.
And then when you trigger it again by using the mana that she makes, you're only rummaging after that then.
Okay, so no matter what, on the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, you're always discarding and drawing a card. Right, okay, I understand. This card is almost like Omnath, a card that doesn't see a ton of CDH play, and it's only in mono red. But I think it's interesting. Does a lot of different stuff. Makes mana, destroys creatures, it's card selection. Those are several of the things that we look for in a commander. I don't know, is this card good? Is this better than Magda or Godo?
Oh, no.
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 No, yeah.
Better than Magda? God, no.
No, this does similarly what Kark and Sakashima wants to do, but it doesn't have blue, which is upsetting.
I feel like this is going to be a better 99 card than anything else. Like, a deck that already wants to be doing Storm stuff like a Kark and Sakashima.
If anywhere, that place makes sense, Kark and Sakashima.
Yeah, I think it would make sense. I think it's kind of expensive for Kark and Sakashima, though, even as a finisher.
You have to make that mana back on it the turn you play it, I would say. You have to be able to do that consistently, because if you can make that mana back on it, then this card's great. If you could cast this and when those same things do everything right away, but I don't know how many decks can reliably do that.
You don't lose unspent red mana as steps and phases end, I think is also a very powerful effect. If you're able to like stash up a couple of extra red mana, like that's probably what you'll need to be able to storm off a lot faster. So I think this is a much better 99 card than leading a commander deck. Maybe Niv-Mizzet wants this if you're casting enough spells, but otherwise, I'm not quite sure.
I mean, the 2 damage to all creatures just feels like really powerful to be able to theoretically be doing every turn. You know what I mean? If you can cast 2 spells a turn and just wrath the board every turn, that can be really good.
It's kind of funny. Flusterstorming allows you to do all 3 of these all in one.
Sure, yeah. If you have a storm cards that don't do much else besides just make your commander go or make this card go.
I still think at 4 mana, this is narrow enough that I'm going to say this is a 2.
No, it's a 2.
I think a 2, yeah. A 2 sounds about right. But it'll feel great. And in the casual pods, this card is going to be incredibly powerful, I think.
You know what's not a 2? Flare of Duplication. This is 1 and 2 red for an instant that lets you sack a non-token red creature rather than paying its mana cost. And you can copy an instant or sorcery and choose new targets for that copy.
This is good because of Rograk.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's a very clear case for this being the best of the cycle.
Yeah, and I think only because of Rograk. It's not that the effect is the strongest. It's just the easiest to cast.
Because the reality is there's no other deck playing this card, right?
Magda.
You know what? Magda. Yeah. Magda.
You're right.
Yeah, there are going to be some times where you're fine to get rid of a dwarf for this effect, for sure.
You know, foot in my mouth. Yeah, that made me feel really silly.
Do you think Obnix runs this too?
Maybe. It's great to sacrifice a Dockside in any of your Rakdos decks to redirect something with the intent of reanimating the Dockside later. That seems really great. But I know for a fact, Rograk Silas, one of the best decks, if not the best deck in the format, and Magda, a sleeper best deck in the format, will certainly play this card.
Yeah. Wow. This card's a 5.
I think this is a 5. And it's so funny. Like, I already mentioned this, but like only because of what the metagame looks like right now, not necessarily because of the effect, just because very good decks can play it. So if something happens, if we get a 0 mana blue creature, the blue flare is the best one by a billion miles. Do you know what I mean? Like, it changes just like that. So as of right now, I think this one's the best one. 4.9. It's not as good as the Necro. Did you rate it?
I don't know if I did. I don't know. 4.95, something like that. Yeah, better than the Necro.
It's going to get a 4.99 then. Galvanic Discharge is a red spell that is an instant and says, choose target creature or planeswalker, and then you get 3 energy. Then you may pay any amount of energy, and this card deals that much damage to that permanent.
Did I put this card on the list?
I put this card on the list.
This is 2 mana?
This is 1 mana.
1 mana.
This is Lightning Bolt for creatures.
Or planeswalkers.
Or planeswalkers, so it can't go to face, but...
Sorcery?
It is an instant. So it is straight up a lightning bolt for creatures. And if you have any additional energy lying around from your storm, volatile storm drake, or from the other energy wrath that we talked about, this card can deal with even bigger things.
If energy is good in CDH, this card will see play. Outside of that, I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at too. I also kind of think the opposite. I think the better... scenario is not that you have energy from something else and you're dealing more damage to a creature. It's that you only need to deal 1 or 2 damage to a creature and this nets you additional energy for something else.
I don't know what else is in my deck that I want to use energy on, I guess.
I have a question. Is this worded such that this can just be red mana, make 3 energy?
Yeah, because you may pay any amount of energy after that.
If energy's good, just that is probably good. Like Dark Ritual for your energy, right?
But I think if energy is good, it's just such a big if.
That's a big if, yeah. I mean, in Modern, I think it's close. This is Modern Horizons, and I think energy probably will be good in Modern. I don't know that it'll touch CDH. We just don't have enough other foundational stuff for this stuff to add to make, like, enough of a deck, but maybe I'm missing something.
Again, like Dr. Madison Lee, like, if she ends up being something that's CEDH viable, like, this is better than Lightning Bolt in that deck, because many times you'll be able to kill significantly better things.
That's true.
Like, the only time that Lightning Bolt is technically better is if you're using it as a win condition to loop and, like, take your opponents out with it. But if you're playing Lightning Bolt without the intention of looping it infinitely, this is... technically better, right? If you shock something with it, you have an extra one, and then if something allows you to return it back to your hand, that's another way that you can get extra energy to cast it again, and that's all just within its parasitic little self too.
I still think it's worse than Lightning Bolt.
Yeah, overall in a vacuum I agree, worse than Lightning Bolt.
But if you are a low color red deck that needs to get rid of Dranith Magistrate, this card's going in your deck. This is a 3 for me in that case.
The downside, like, there's a Rakdos deck that already plays Lightning Bolt. Does it play this instead? You can't loop Lightning Bolt in the Rakdos deck normally. Maybe some deck can, but the main thing you're doing is for the damage. Is the damage to a player, if they ad nauseum down to 3, worth it? Does that ever actually come up where you'd, like, be looking at this card and your opponent's at 3 and you go, fuck!
Have you ever done that?
Never, but yeah. I wanted to.
Have you ever done... Oh, you don't play ad nauseum.
But your opponents won't go below 3 if they think you... if they put you on Lightning Bolt. You know what I mean? It is cards that they don't see.
Yeah, it's very rare that they're going to play around Rakdos Bolt, though.
Decks that you're talking about, that Galvanic Discharge would just be strictly better than Lightning Bolt, if that's the case.
And especially if you're already, like, if you're playing any other energy cards, which if you're in Rakdos, you're probably playing the enchantment that we mentioned that I forgot what the name
Chthonian
of it is.
Chthonian Nightmare? Chthonian that's a Nightmare. Great point, yeah.
So if you're playing Chthonian Nightmare already, then this becomes a little bit better, maybe? And
kind of funnily
enough. What are you
enough,
trying to
like
return from your graveyard that has more than 3 CMC?
What?
What are you trying to return from your graveyard that has more than 3 CMC?
No, I was saying so you could use it to deal 4 damage to something later on with, like, an Underworld Breach. You deal 2 damage to one thing, you Underworld Breach it, and then you can deal 4 damage to something else. That's not going to come up very often. It's going to feel basically just like Bolt. But I do think that'll come up more than being able to deal 3 damage to your opponent's face, is all I mean.
I don't think it's a card to just write off because it doesn't deal damage to players' faces. I think that's a lot less relevant on Lightning Bolt than any other text on it.
For other formats, this card's much worse. But for our format, yeah. I think that damage to the face is so much less. So I still think I give this like a 2.5, maybe. 1.5 from Tyler.
I already gave it a 3.
You gave it a 3? Okay. 2.5 felt really high for me.
Party Thrasher is 1 in a red for a Lizard Wizard. It's a 1/4.
That's so fun to
so
say.
Good, right?
Okay, Lizard first Wizard. Of all, wasn't this also your nickname in college? Second of all, Lizard Wizard is the name of a board game that my boyfriend really likes, and it is pretty fun, but it takes a long time. Anyway,
this is a 1/4 that says non-creature spells you cast from exile have Convoke. And at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, you may discard a card. And if you do, you exile the top 2 cards of your library, choose one of them, and you can play that card this turn.
This is a red Dark Confidant.
It's better because you don't lose life.
It's better because you don't lose life.
But it's worse because it's not card advantage. You have to discard a card, and you can only play one of the 2 that you exile.
That's true. Yeah, but it's 4 toughness, so it's good against Orcish Master.
But you see 2 cards instead of Confidant where you see 1. Yeah, you're right. It's not card advantage. I still think this is pretty damn good.
I think it's good.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's bad, yeah. But...
I really like that this has 4 toughness and it's pseudo card advantage. I really think this card's actually going to see a decent amount of play. This is another one, though, that, like, Rakdos decks, I love this in. 2-color red decks, I love this in. Once you get to 3, I'm a little bit less interested in, but even still, some of, like, the 3-color Grixis decks, they want to discard cards sometimes. Like, that's not going to be the end of the world. If you're playing Razaketh, or if you're playing Hoarding Broodlord, or if you're playing any Underworld Breach strategies, you can use the discard to your favor. I think this card is something. I think it's a real good card.
Yeah, I guess if you're looking for your Rhystic Study options in non-blue decks, like, this is something that you would look at and be disappointed that it's not Rhystic Study, but, like, at least it's doing something.
And we didn't even talk about the main thing, the Convoking from Exile. So Obnixilis, things like Prosper, if you're doing any of those cards that the commander itself exile cards and allow you to play them, yeah, this is great because it's a mana reduction on it. So not only is it cards, it's also mana, and it has the 4 toughness
for some of your spells. Yeah.
Obnix got a lot of love in this set.
Obnix got a lot, I think, because it's a 2-color Rakdos deck, and we've been talking a lot about 2-color Rakdos decks.
Yeah, this card's pretty good. This card's pretty good.
I think I'm going to give it, like, truly, I think it's like a 4. I think this is like a real CDH card.
I think that's probably high. I think I'm going to give it a 3 for me.
I'm going 4.3. I think 4.3? It's higher than a 4.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. That makes me feel great.
Just thinking about what else we put at 4.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I know. That's why I gave it a 3. That's what we got for it. So let's talk about Pinnacle Monk. This is 3-2 red for a 2/2 Jin Monk. It has prowess, and when it enters the battlefield, you return an instant or sorcery from your graveyard to your hand, and it's a land on the back.
This one is one of the... I don't know if it's one of the worst ones or one of the best ones. Like,
it's absolutely one of the worst.
Worst ones, right?
5.
5 mana is so much.
It's
that's
so
insane.
Much. But yeah, when you don't have 5 mana, it's just a land, so it's never dead. And, like, the fact that it can actually get you back an instant or sorcery spell, whether that's interaction or, like, something that's going to help you win the game again, like, that's still very handy to have.
Right, but what decks have instants or sorceries that win in the game that actually want this card?
A Peer into the Abyss deck that isn't on Ad Nauseam, which we're finding more and more of them coming up to, because if you want to play, like, Hoarding Broodlord, you don't want to play Ad Nauseam, but you would play Peer.
I think this one is, like, great when the game stalls out. Like, if the game, like, dirtles out and everyone is, like, not doing a ton, but, like, those games don't come up very often. Everyone is playing a whole bunch of draw engines and they're really in the game. So I think this does fix a little bit of a problem of the Rakdos deck can get way ahead of themselves, blow their whole hand, and they don't have anything. And then this is a pretty good top deck. If you went for a win, it probably means you have a Demonic Tutor in your graveyard or something. If you can top deck this, slam it, get your tutor back, that's a world that I'd like to be in. And then sometimes it's just like a land that casts your Rite of Flame. That can be good too. But the 5 mana keeps it out of Ad Nauseam decks, which is a stinker.
I think what will end up happening is this is the only color that really does not have like a suitable land for this cycle that's going to replace what we already have. Like, I think Shatterskull Smashing is just better enough than this that we're not really going to look to Pinnacle Monk. And the other red card that does this, it's Sundering Eruption. It's 2 and a red for a sorcery that says destroy target land. Its controller may search their library for a basic land, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle.
Garbage
creatures
bin.
Without flying can't block this turn.
Right to the garbage bin. Ass. Direct asshole. Not
yeah,
good.
It's
yep.
much worse than Pinnacle Monk.
Zero. Stars should be 1 red mana to destroy 3 lands is yeah, what it should do on that
really
side.
Speaking
be.
Of which, Pinnacle Monk, I'm gonna say, is only 2 stars. That's
yeah,
a 2.
Even if we're going to stars now, I'll give it 1.5 star.
This card is still a 1 because Shadow Skull Smashing is just too much better. Power Balance is next. This is 2 red for an enchantment that says whenever an opponent casts a spell, you may reveal the top card of your library. If you do, you may cast that card without paying its mana cost. If the 2 spells have the same mana value.
This is a trap. This card is a trap.
This card's a trap card?
I don't think it's good. You think it's good?
No, I not really.
I don't think it's good.
So it is a trap. Okay.
This is another one that, like, I think Elsha would be fine to play this card.
I was just going to say, yeah.
A deck like Elsha, where you're often looking at the top of your deck with your commander, you have many ways to change the top of your deck. That's your whole strategy. I think it's fine there. Outside of that, really not interested. You're just never going to hit. It's not going to be consistent enough. That's my big issue with this card. It's just so rarely, it's just never going to hit what you want it to do. At least with the counterbalance, you could, like, stop what they're going to do, maybe.
I did get to see this card in play already, and it was followed up by a Drannith Magistrate, like, immediately, which totally shut this thing off. You know what? It wasn't even a Drannith Magistrate. It was a card that we're going to talk about later on the show.
Later, like, in next week?
Later in, like, in next week, called Vexing Bauble, which also doesn't let you play things for free, right?
Yeah, so, like, that card's good.
So, like, there's a couple of cards already in the format that this is going to be at odds with. I don't know. I kind of like that counterbalance is the protection side of things and like is a little bit more disruptive, whereas power balance, specifically because you're in red too, the timing of the things that are going to be on top of your library may not be when you want them as well. So I think you're actually going to get maybe messed up more by power balance than you want it to do.
And for some players, you're going to cast the first three hits off of this and your opinion on this card is going to be shifted forever and you're going to think it's the best thing ever. And for you, I'm so happy for you. That's awesome. Like, sometimes this is going to feel like the red Rhystic Study. Like, in Christmas Land, this does do insane things. I just think, on average, this will do nothing too many times for it to be worth a card slot.
Yeah, you're going to hear a lot of anecdotal evidence about this card being really good, but just remember, those are just stories you're hearing. Like, you got to look at what it's actually going to do.
Right. But in Elsha, I think this is a real card. I think in Elsha, Elsha likes this card. Outside of that, not so much. I give it, like, a 1.6.
I'll say a 2, but I think that might be generous.
I'll split the difference, and I'll give it a 1.8 then, just for diplomacy. Gentlemen, we have one more card to talk about today, and it's technically a multicolor card. This is Ral, Monsoon Mage. This is one in a red for a legendary creature, human wizard, that's a 1-3. Instants and sorcery spells you cast cost one less to cast. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell during your turn, you flip a coin. If you lose the flip, you get dealt the damage by Ral. But if you win, you get to exile Ral and return him to the battlefield transformed into Ral Leyline Prodigy. He enters the battlefield with an additional loyalty counter on him for each instant and sorcery spell that you've cast this turn. And to plus him up for one, until the end of your next turn, instants and sorcery spells you cast cost one less to cast. You can minus two him to deal two damage divided as you choose among one or two targets, and then draw a card if you control a blue permanent other than Ral, and then it has a -8 that says exile the top 8 cards of your library. You can cast an instant of sorcery from among them without paying their mana cost.
Jesus Christ. This card does so many things for 2 mana.
It does so many things for 2 mana, so it has to be good, right?
I think, honestly, I think so. So some of the things that it does, it makes instants and sorceries cheaper, so it's some sort of mana,
it's
right?
Already Baral Chief of Compliance right on the front.
I think that's most of it. That's the most important
effect. That's most
of
what it's doing. Sometimes it's a little bit of removal. Sometimes it's a little extra card draw, and then sometimes you get to do that final thing, which is like a lot of card draw or something?
Yeah, it was exile the top 8 cards, and you can cast instants and sorceries for free.
Which means if you've already cast spells, you can just cast this after you've already cast 8 spells and just do that right away?
Realistically, I think that the only deck that this actually goes in is Quarksaka, because the reduction is already like almost there, but the fact that the -8, like if you've already had a storm turn when you've been able to cast 8 spells, then that is the additional gas to like find a game winning instant or sorcery or something that will get you to one. If you're in the mode where you're just spinning your wheels going like, I just need to see a few more cards to be able to close the game.
I didn't think about any of that. I just saw that it said flip a coin and I said, oh, that's a Quark card.
Can you play this in a Rakdos deck?
No, because it does have a blue color identity.
It has a blue color identity. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing as like Valky, God of Lies, where like you have to play that in a Rakdos based deck. This has to be played in a Izzet based deck.
It's hard to evaluate because it looks like it does a bunch of little things, but it has so many words for only 2 mana investment. To me, that is like a big green flag of this is a powerful card. And we didn't even really talk about the other planeswalkers of the set. Probably rightfully slow. I don't know that a ton of them will touch CDH, but they feel so difficult to evaluate to me because for 1 and 2 mana, you get a textbook of different shit. Like the Tamio might end up seeing play, I think. That card might actually be good enough, but
I don't know how good the back of Tamio is.
She's like a Snapcaster Mage, sort of. She gets something back. If it's green, she makes mana. We didn't talk about it. All I mean is that they are difficult to evaluate because they have so many words for such a low mana value. I could see it doing a lot.
It's definitely going to do a lot in Kraken Sakashima, which is why I'm going to give it a 3, but I'm also giving it a 3 because it could even do more in other decks too. Like, it seems relatively easy to flip this.
4 in Kraken Saka, 2 in every other deck.
About a 3 for me.
That sounds good. Well, that's where we're going to end it off for this week here. Join us next week for when we talk about green, multicolor, and the colorless cards for Modern Horizons 3.
Thanks so much for watching. If you like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon like our $100 patrons.
Very Khan, Olden Groompy, Upsetter Ion, Gecko21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Kajo Alex, Sean of the Ice, Mark Silero, SoCal Acura, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Rosgrease, Peter Stewart, Cornell Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Goto9, Kwaja Ahamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby G-Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Huge shout out to Dragon Shield for supporting the show. Use code playtowin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
Follow us on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
Bye. We'll be right back.
Mystic Muffin Man, Nick Saxby, Jacob Bauer, and Big Mike, Nicholas Balder, Reactive, Tyler Watson, Brian Barrington, Zachary Coulson, Tyler H, X Tyler, The Tree X, Mulcraft, Driving Crooner, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Hubba Ghost, Justin, Man Solo, Pedro, Jacob Depp, Michael Below, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Tyler, how big is your box? Say it in the microphone.
I have a huge box.
If you could guess
like
how big...
6x6x11.
And what's the girth?
Have I told you that there's a gay porn star called Girth Brooks, and I think it's really funny?
You've told me this many times, yes.
That's because it's hilarious.